Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, Heartbreakers. Welcome back to another episode of The Breakup Breakdown. Today, I'm joined by Tricia Schwartz, who is a therapist and licensed mental health counselor based in New York City with Mindful Mental Health Counseling and Wellness. You can find them on social platforms at mindful.mentalhealth or their website, mindfulmentalhealthcounseling.com. Thanks for joining me, Tricia.
Yes, of course.
Happy to have you as well. Thank you for jumping on. So we had a wild story this week where we had a guest come on and talk about her breakup, her young love breakup, where she dated this guy and she says that he cheated on her with his sister, which is a wild story. What I loved about my conversation with her is we really got to get to the root of why she stayed with someone who, to me, from my perspective, didn't really sound like he treated her super well throughout the relationship. She talked about some of the issues that she experienced that led her to that relationship. So I figure we could tackle a few, with the first one being self-esteem, because it's such a prevalent issue with specifically young women, but just young people in general. You don't know who you are. You don't have any like foundation of feeling like you have security in what you believe. You're constantly trying to please people. I'm curious, from a mental health standpoint, when you work with young adults and teens, how do you help them establish who they are with their self-esteem, with their self-worth, so they don't get into relationships that aren't beneficial to them?
You said it perfectly, right? Like, all teenagers, you know, even now as young as like 8, 9 years old, you know, we are all self-conscious. Everyone's looking at what everyone else is doing. We have what's called like main character syndrome, which is like a, you know, a fun term. It's not clinical, but it's the idea that everybody thinks that they're the star and everyone's looking at them. But the reality is everybody's looking at themselves. So nobody's really looking at anybody else. But, you know, regardless, everybody feels like all eyes are on me. And if I don't conform with, you know, what my friends are doing or what this person who I admire thinks I should be doing or what I think I should be doing, you know, then I'm going to be, you know, left out or left out of the group or, you know, not going to be desired by whoever. And so I think that that creates a lot of anxiety. And I think it's, you know, it goes without saying, it's 100 times more intense now with social media, because, you know, prior to kids and young adults and teenagers having access to social media, your frame of reference was the kids you saw at school, maybe the kids you saw in your neighborhood. And now it's kids literally all over the world. And not only just, you know, kids and teenagers your age, there's now AI representations of them. So no one even knows if who they're comparing themselves to is even a real person, let alone how old they are and, you know, anything about them. So I think, just, you know, want to preface with the self-esteem challenges that young people are faced with right now, like that what they're up against is immeasurable. And, you know, so with that being said, what I do in my work with teenagers and young adults is, you know, first we focus on your values. And I have a list of like 100 something values, and we just go through them and we think about like, what kind of friend do you want to be? What kind of daughter or son do you want to be? What kind of sister or brother do you want to be? What kind of partner do you want to be in a romantic relationship? You know, what kind of student? What kind of worker? What, you know, and we go through all their different roles in their life. And we talk about how they ideally want to show up, right? If everything was going your way, if this was like, you know, all everything was in line and you could be exactly who you want to be, there was nothing holding you back, how would you show up as your best self? So we sort of take stock of what are your values, what's important to you. And I think that for a young person, that can serve as like a guiding principle of, you know, I want to be courteous. I want to be respectful. I want to be conscientious. I want to be honest, you know? And so I think that helps them to at least have a frame of reference, almost like bumpers if you're bowling, like sort of like a way to guide them in what direction should I even be going in?
No, that's a great way of phrasing it. You don't want to give them like a training wheels to where there's almost like no risk of, you know, going off course, but like bumpers on a, what is it called? Like a bowling runway is good because it kind of implies like the freedom to like get close to the edge, but also kind of bounce back to be like, okay, if those are your values, all right, head back to the center, but don't like swing the pendulum too far to the other side. Now, something else that the guest that I interviewed brought up on the podcast, which I think is just kind of like a timeless feeling. I don't know if you ever get to a point where you feel like you're not running behind on life, but she was explaining that one of the reasons that she got herself into this relationship was she was 17 and she felt like she was behind in life because, you know, how are you 17, but you've never had a boyfriend before? And I almost wonder, like, why do we feed ourselves this lie that we're behind on life? Like, is there any truth to like by certain ages you should be naturally inclined to have experienced certain things? Like maybe I do need to put myself in that situation because that's just what you do. And I want to catch up and get to that point developmentally. So is there any like factual truth to like, okay, if I haven't experienced this by this age, like maybe it's a me thing.
Right. I mean, that's all bogus things that society and pop culture and the media tells us, right? None of that is true. What's true is that there's no timeline. Right. Especially now, you know, in present day, people do all sorts of things at all different phases in life in any different order. And it all works. Right. I think a lot of the stories that we are fed are based in, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago where, you know, men had a certain role and women had a certain role. And, you know, everyone's job was to find a partner, get married and have children. You know, now people have jobs. They never get married. They start families in unconventional ways, you know. And I think that that from a young adult, an older young adult, right, like 20s and 30s, that's really hard to digest. And that sort of trickles down to a teenager or even like a 10 or 12 year old feeling that peer pressure of, well, if I don't do this by this age, then I won't be there by that age. And I don't want to fall behind. And again, that self-conscious, you know, main character syndrome of everyone's looking at me. Everyone knows I haven't had a boyfriend. Everyone thinks that's weird. And the reality is nobody's looking at anybody and nobody really cares what anyone else is doing. I think where you get where young people in, you know, middle school, high school can get into a really tough situation is because everybody's so self-conscious, peer pressure, bullying, all that stuff can crop up and mean, you know, teenagers will use whatever they can about someone else sometimes to try and differentiate someone in attempts to create like a higher social standing for themselves. So I think a lot of times that peer pressure where it comes from is the idea that like, if I'm not doing what everyone else is doing, that makes me open to somebody pointing something out about me and calling it out. And now I'm embarrassed. And now I feel like, you know, I'm going to be ostracized. And I think that that is like really real and something that teenagers and, you know, have to deal with. And that's really, you know, unfortunate and upsetting and not a reason to do something that you're not comfortable doing. Right. Mm-hmm. So that kind of teen sort of those dynamics, those relationships and how friendships are in that time can, I think, really be either amazing, right? Mm. If you have supportive friends who say, you know, don't do anything you're not comfortable with, or I'm going to do this, but you don't have to, you know, that kind of thing. Or it can be really damaging if someone's trying to encourage someone to do something that they're not ready to do. You know, that person, not only do they have the internal conflict of, I don't want to do this, but now I feel like I should. Now they're, you know, thinking, well, if I don't do it, then what are these people going to think of me?
Mm. Yeah, that leads me into my next question, because something else that came up in this girl's breakup story is it brings up the issue of like developmental differences between teens, because I feel like at that age, a year can be a big difference. Like when you get into your 20s, like the difference between 25 and 26 is kind of like not really much of a difference going on here. But like between like 17 and 18, people can be in two completely different places in their lives just from like a a life standpoint, but also mentally, sexually, all of that. I know there might be some parents listening, but like, how do you navigate that as a teen, but also as a parent when it comes to age differences? Somebody might be ready for something that somebody isn't. Everyone's running at different paces at that age, right?
What can be helpful and is not always possible is if parents in a community can sort of be in communication around, you know, what are the rules? You know, let's say you have a group of teenagers that are all friends. If the parents can sort of get on the same page of what are the rules around being at someone's house when the parents aren't home, or kids hanging out at the movies late at night, or, you know, all these different things that can come up, curfews, so that everyone sort of has the same, again, like bumpers that their kids are living within because their kids are all doing something together. Now, that being said, that's the ideal. That's definitely not always possible. But I think that what each parent has to remind themselves and remind their child is, you know, the importance of having that courage of conviction to say, I'm not ready for that. And that's okay. And I think something else that can be really helpful that parents can do with their kids, or that kids can even do with each other, teenagers, is to come up with like a script, right? A one-liner, a party line of, you know, I'm not going to try that right now, but you go ahead, right? Or something that they feel comfortable saying when they're faced with a choice and they don't want to do something that others around them are doing. And having them recite that, right? Like role-playing it, you know, Johnny, if someone says, do you want a beer? What do you think you're going to say if you don't want to have that beer? And then having Johnny say, you go ahead, I'm going to pass right now. You know, and getting them comfortable with saying it so that when they're in that moment, their words come out of their mouth, they're comfortable using that language because the situation will be uncomfortable enough.
I feel like everyone has the courage to maybe say it once, like it's a little shaky and you say, no, like I'm not ready for that. And then someone kind of pushes you into that. How do you build their courage to be able to still stand their ground when they're continuously getting pressed on something that they've said no to once? Because kids at that age, I feel like are pretty ruthless. Like they don't have the concept of like, okay, no means no.
Right, right. Definitely. I think providing your teen with like the other options, right? So let's say, and again, like all through role play, I think is just the most practical way for a teenager to be able to draw on that memory in the moment and use those skills that they practiced. So, you know, let's say, you know, someone says, you know, do you want to go in the other room and lay down in the bed and do, you know, whatever?
Yeah.
You know, no, I'm not going to do that now, or I'm not ready for that. Or, you know, I'm not feeling that tonight. Let's just say something more like teen colloquial, although who knows what they say now, but, you know, and then they say, well, come on, it's fine. There's going to be this other couple in there and it'll be okay. And just saying, no, I'm not going, you know, and telling your teenager, you know what, if you say something twice and you're still getting pressured, that's the key. That's the time to take yourself out of the situation. So say, you know what, I got to run to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom, text a friend, can you meet me in the bathroom? Or, you know, have a safe person. And I think this is another huge tip for teenagers is have that one safe person that you say to each other, we're going to be each other's safe person. So if I feel uncomfortable, I'm going to come over to you and I'm going to squeeze your hand and we're going to go do something. Right. You're going to take me out of the situation, because having an ally when you're feeling pressured can sort of help to diffuse the situation rather than continuing to go back and forth with the person who's making you feel pressured. So I think reminding your child that they can remove themselves from the situation, and sometimes that's the best way to get out of something that you don't want to do.
That's so powerful what you said. Like if somebody's asking you multiple times and you've had to say no twice or three times, you're probably not the issue. When you're at that age, you're so self-conscious that like if you're saying no to things, like you start to second guess yourself. Like, well, maybe it's not that big of a deal. Or like, I do really like this person. So like, why don't I want to do this? Like maybe they're right. Or maybe if I don't go quote unquote all the way, or if I do, you know, this, maybe it'll make me more comfortable. Having that in the back of your mind, if like, if somebody is continuously pressuring you, it's probably a sign that it's a situation that they're convincing you to be in rather than something you actually will want to be a part of. The next thing I want to talk about is the attachment wounds, AKA like daddy issues. And I know so many women that struggle with this. And I feel like it starts at that age of like when you're starting to date and have more serious relationships, and maybe they don't notice it consciously, but their behaviors are indicative of having absentee male figures in their life or having men come in and out of their life. Can you explain to listeners who don't have that experience. When we say like a woman has daddy issues and she has all these boyfriends because she has daddy issues, like why is that? And what's the backing behind it from her experience with men?
So I think it starts, of course, attachment starts the day we're born. You know, how do we attach to our parents or our main caregivers, right? Are we securely attached, which means I know that if I cry, my needs get met. Are we insecurely attached? That can be avoidant, right? I know that if, you know, someone wants to be close to me, if my parent comes to try and, you know, console me and they're hurting me, then I, you know, cow away. I try to, you know, avoid people getting close to me because my experience as a very young child was that when someone, you know, came to care for me, they hurt me. We can also have anxious attachment, right? I'm not sure how my caregiver is going to respond to me because I'm a baby and I'm crying and sometimes they scream at me and sometimes they're, you know, nice and they give me milk or whatever it is. And sometimes they're really not nice. So now I'm anxiously attached because I don't know how someone is going to respond to me. Or I had a caregiver, a parent, a dad, and, you know, this young woman's case, who came and gone, right? Who's here and not, and I didn't know. So I wasn't really sure if I could attach to this figure because were they going to be here tomorrow or were they going to be gone? They weren't a safe person to attach to. So that manifests, you know, all throughout our lives. And then especially in romantic relationships, because now someone's showing me care, right? Now I'm 18 years old and somebody's showing me, they're saying, I like you. You know, I really think you're great. I love you. I want to be with you. But I'm not sure, right? I'm not sure if they mean it or if the next day they're going to be gone. You know, I'm not sure if they're going to always be that way or if they're going to turn on me if I don't please them. And I think that that's then how this sort of manifests itself into women in, you know, a large part, sort of becoming people pleasers and doing things that they're not comfortable with because they are telling themselves a story, you know, subconsciously that if I want to keep this person around, I have to be a really good girl. I have to do what they ask. I have to make them happy so that they don't leave me. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, what that lends itself to is people on the other side who seek out women who are people pleasers. So then a man who comes from a certain set of background, who wants things his way, will sort of, you know, he'll be more attracted to a woman who is more submissive, who is more of a people pleaser, and she will, you know, find herself sort of attracted to someone who she feels that she can win their affection because that makes someone feel like they have more control, right? I know if I do this, then you're happy. Now I know how to make you happy. And that's a really comfortable place to be versus someone who is securely attached. They may say, well, you know, if I want to do this and you want, and that makes you happy, that's great. But if I don't, you better still be here. Mm. But that guy is not going to want to stick around with someone who doesn't want to do what they want to do.
It sucks for the securely attached person because then they start to think that there's something wrong with them. Like, oh, I'm being myself. And then that person leaves because of it. And then you start to think, well, is there something deep down like wrong with me? And then I feel like it starts like a different cycle for those securely attached people too.
Right. And that's why it's so important for everybody, you know, so securely attached, you know, anxiously, all of those, you know, different attachment styles to have people in their life who love them unconditionally. That's like the number one factor to predict, you know, positive life outcomes is having, you know, one, it really only takes one, but, you know, one or more people in your life who can provide that unconditional support and love so that when I go home and I say this happened to me and I told him I didn't want to do this and then he said, screw you, and he left, you have someone to tell you why that happened, right? And to reaffirm that you did the right thing, you stood up for yourself, and that's okay.
How do adult women, I'm going to specifically speak to adult women since that's where the quote unquote daddy issues tend to take root more. So how do adults who think they know who they are and think they are confident in that and then show that they don't really have that confidence when they have like those attachment issues come up. How do you handle that and almost have to reintroduce yourself to who you are so that you feel confident and don't like give in to things as an adult? Like, how do you reintroduce that confidence for adults?
One of the amazing things about therapy, honestly, is that, we can talk about, a specific, my client will talk about their specific childhood and where things came from and how did that feel at 6 years old when dad left? What were you thinking? Were you thinking it was your fault? And really start to dig deep into that trauma and process it in a way that now our adult mind can understand it in a way that our child mind could not. So we sort of heal from the child all the way through to present day. And thinking about how those attachment wounds have really sort of threaded through. And in some cases, it involves reparenting ourselves to give ourselves the love that our parents could not give us. And all of that work through therapy, people really do find a renewed sense of self-confidence, self-esteem, self-worth, and it's beautiful to see.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for everything you've been able to lend to us in terms of just like all of these different topics we covered. I feel like really at the root of everything we talked about was just self-esteem and self-worth. So if you could leave my audience with just any practical advice about how to have a strong sense of self so that you can go into these relationships and have it be healthy and secure, like what would you let them know so they can at least do one thing that's going to better their relationships today?
Yeah, I would say try to think about what your core values are and how you want to be as a person and what that looks like in your day-to-day life. So maybe it's I want to be responsible, so I show up at work on time, that kind of thing. And going through like each value and how does that look in real life.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much again. This was Tricia Schwartz, a therapist and licensed mental health counselor. You can check her out at mindful.mentalhealth on all social platforms. Thank you so much, Tricia.
Thank you.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.